Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we want you to, you know, be advised to always remember to learn, pray, and act, right? I mean, we got to get smart, become intelligent, because that's how we become dangerous. Knowledge is power, but it doesn't become power until we act upon that. So, again, learn, then pray of, you know, what you need to do and how to act, and then go act. There you go. And so, in addition, your campaign begins yesterday, began at the end of the election period, because that's when you want to start your public relations campaign on the person that should never have been elected in the first place. And you need to prove this to everybody in the community. Why is this person in office? Because they're not going to do anything to protect our liberties. They're just basically a rubber stamp and another wheel in the big machinery or the cog of injustice. So, again, your campaign began a while ago. You're behind the eight ball. Let's get moving. Give us a call. I've been talking to many of you. We need to get people from every state and every county in every state. So we're looking forward to having a problem of not having enough time, okay? And there's never enough time, believe me. Welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
And the one thing that I also say as a regular now is that as we look at what the heck is going on, I need to make sure we maintain this focus. One thing I learned in the Marine Corps is harassment is never effective unless it's consistent. Because if you just harass somebody on an issue, doesn't mean that they're going to follow through or get it done. You have to constantly get to them, if they finally get something done. So you got to do follow-up. And so with this concept of the role of the Justice Department, if the Justice Department was completely retooled as the enforcement entity of constitutional compliance, making sure that every public servant that is currently in, they should not be attacking or going after any American citizen because they don't have the authority to do that. But they do have the authority to ensure that every public servant that is serving, whether they're a justice, whether they're a governor, or whether they're a congressperson, if they fail to support the Constitution, they vote for something that's against it, this is how we clean things up, folks. When we start forcing and enforcing and holding people fully liable to their actions as a public servant, the problems will, you know, they'll dissipate, they'll vanish, they will evaporate. However you want to put it, they're gone because now we actually are getting them to do what they're supposed to be doing, and they will no longer ever do things that they don't have the authority to do. If that makes sense, then great. You got it. Great. Did that make sense, Tammy?
Yeah.
I think it's simple. I don't think this is difficult. But the fact is, that's the supreme law of the land. That's exactly what Section 3 of the 14th Amendment demands. You cannot maintain a position. You cannot collect a check as a public servant if you have failed to support the Constitution. You're no longer eligible to be in office. And so we don't need to have trials. There's no due process. You're ineligible. So the Department of Justice could easily go around and start ripping people out of office, say, you're gone. I'm sorry. What you just did, AOC, was an absolute violation. You're running an insurrection. You're using your office to do that. And you can't be in office anymore. Bye. Wow. Okay, so now we're about ready to dive into the Madison's Notes on the Constitutional Convention. And yesterday I covered the Madison's remonstrance on religion and the religious assessments, because they wanted to basically make sure they were trying to revitalize the Anglican Church or the Episcopal Church of Virginia. And so they wanted to make sure that they, you know, were giving, or the state legislature was creating laws to basically start forcing, you know, the enforcement of going to church, or at least supporting that concept. And so Madison, you know, wrote this really long, I mean, several, 14, I think, arguments against it. But anyway, anywho, I'm committed to giving you content. And right now we're going through the land and state admissions into the Union, those types of specific topics regarding Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention. The reason why is because in the ratification debates, they don't really delve into these details that much. And so it's important that we all understand, you know, what the equal footing doctrine means. Why did they create the Electoral College, and what was its purpose, and what behind that? So are you ready?
I am.
Okay, so we left off. Madison just had a pretty decent discourse, and now Mason basically stands up and says this.
Colonel Mason agreed with Mr. Governor Morse that we ought to leave the interests of the people to the representatives of the people, that the objection was that the legislature would cease to be the representatives of the people. It would continue, so no longer than the states now containing a majority of the people should retain that majority. As soon as the southern and western populations should predominate, which must happen in a few years, the power
would be in the hands of
The power would be in the hands of the minority and would never be yielded to the majority unless provided for by the Constitution.
Right. Okay. So, folks, there are abbreviations, and when you haven't read the abbreviations or you're not used to it, you go, WD? What does that mean? And so if you're reading along with us, then you're going to appreciate the, you know, what is that? What is that? That's not a word. These are Madison's notes. This is his shorthand. I mean, the detail that he actually provides is amazing, considering, you know, how people can use shorthand to ad nauseum, to where it's almost cryptic. You couldn't understand. I know lots of people can't understand the notes because it's all shorthand, every bit of it. Now, one of the things he points to is he says he agrees with Mr. Governor Morris that we ought to leave the interest of the people to the representatives of the people. What that means, folks, and I want to drive this home, because we have a judiciary that has put itself in between us and our representatives. You got a problem with government, you come to us. And actually, our government is Republican in form. Everything we need to do, that we need redress for regarding government, should be with our representatives first, period. You go into court, then you're seeking something else, and you're not seeking redress with government. If you go into the court to have them redress a problem with government, then you've just basically surrendered your Republican form of government.
So what about the abortion bills that get challenged and taken to court?
Well, so the abortion bill, it depends on, you know, how you're challenging it. The problem is people challenge these issues on emotions. In other words, when you look at, let's say Wyoming has an abortion bill that they're trying to put into and amend their constitution with, there are two points that you need to drive. First off, if this amendment is not being done properly, it's being done by voter initiative, because this is how it happened in Washington State. In 1971, a voter initiative basically passed as an amendment to the Constitution to make abortion legal in the state of Washington. And so the problem is that legislation cannot and should never, it is an aberration to a Republican form of government, come from the people. It needs to come from the state legislature. And first and foremost, the state legislature cannot create a law regarding anything that is not within their delegated responsibility. So if the Wyoming Constitution or the Washington Constitution does not grant them the ability to determine whether people can kill their babies or life at all or any of those types of things, if it's not in the Constitution, then they can't create the law. This is how the progressives basically got us to buy into a democracy to let us hang ourselves by going out and getting a voter initiative and letting mob rule start changing your Constitution. And more importantly, the bigger problem is that we actually allowed our Constitution to be changed by mob rule. What does that mean? That means that if it's 50% plus one of the voters of the state vote for something to be legal or constitutional, somehow that makes it constitutional, and that is a democratic process. It's democratic in form. It violates the sovereignty and the concept of these county governments. When you look at the federal constitution, every state constitution should have been modeled just like it, so that when you amend your state constitution, it would require a two-thirds or at least, at best, a three-fourths majority of the counties must ratify the amendment. Now, do you think anybody would be able to get an amendment in regarding abortion in any state if it required?
Well, these are bills to ban abortion are being challenged.
Okay, so the bills that are to ban abortion, the fact is, do they have the authority in the Constitution to legislate for or against? In other words, can they create? All laws must be in pursuance to the powers delegated. The Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution is like and applicable to state constitutions. If the people didn't grant them that ability, then they should not be able to dictate whether it's legal or illegal.
Protecting life, does it include life, liberty?
I understand that. But see, how are abortions being done in the state today? Is it the state doing it, or is it the federal government that's pushing it?
Well, now it's the state.
But see, actually, before the states did it, the federal government pushed it upon them. Because the Roe v. Wade made a federal decision that abortion was now legal, and it forced every state to do that. So every state, after Roe v. Wade was rescinded, every state should have been set back to zero. Abortions now, because we never made it legal, it's not in our Constitution, we can't make a law about it, so abortions cannot be done, nor can we prohibit the abortion itself. So in other words, it would literally be the conscience of the clinic if it is self-funded. If it is funded by the state, then the state has the ability to dictate, well, we can't allow it, we can't support it one way or the other, so you can't do it. Until it's delegated to us, we can't be involved in abortion. Does that make sense? No?
It's a hard concept to swallow, but I hear what you're saying.
So if government can't meddle with it, that means that they can't fund it.
Right.
In other words, no person can be taxed to actually pay for an abortion.
Sure, that part makes 100% sense, but just the ability to have a clinic that does abortions.
If a clinic comes in and they want to be, they're self-funded and they want to do that, it would be a requirement. And see, here's the problem. If you want your state to create the law against that, you have to delegate that power to them. And so here's the problem. It shouldn't be a state issue. I think it should be a county issue. Because once counties start creating constitutions, then you may actually have a county that says, we're going to allow this. We're going to allow, you know, but they can't. So just remember that they can't tax people for something that they don't necessarily have the authority to do, but they can allow self-funding organizations, because every person has a right of conscientious objection. And, you know, what you need to do regarding your state is to be able to actually create this right. Let's go to the Ninth Amendment, right? And so when we look at the Ninth Amendment, and am I there? Yeah, I'm getting there. So I'm not there yet, folks. GR is a little bit slow sometimes. So the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution, so in the state constitution, the federal constitution, it allows healthcare rights to be provided for, right? The enumeration in the Constitution, whether it's a state or federal, of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Others have a right to say, you cannot use my tax dollars. So in other words, they can tie the hands of government to say, you know, you can allow it to happen, but the person that actually, you know, is seeking that abortion, they'll have to self-fund it themselves. They have to pay the full cost. In other words, they have to pay for the consequences of their sin. We're down this path of saying, well, once it's an entitlement, then we pay for it. No, no, no. You have a right to actually stand up and say, you shall not use my dollars. And that person will then say, okay, because they cannot demand that you have to pay for their transgressions.
Sure.
Okay.
100% sense.
Okay, so when we look,
the part that doesn't make 100% sense is the not allowing the killing of it.
So I understand the morality part. I'm completely against it, morality wise and everything else. But if we have a true liberal society, you know, adultery is against the law. It was against the law, has been against the law. Against God's law. Thou shalt not take life, against God's law. We've created laws to kind of protect that. Now, the question is, when we've created these laws, and we actually have laws on the books to protect life, this is where we go down that point of now they want to redefine life. This will actually boil into a county where they want for themselves to govern themselves independently. They will want to try to redefine that life and say, we don't believe that that's just a fetus. It's, you know, we'll protect the eagle's egg as sacred. You destroy an eagle's nest where there's eggs in it, you're going to jail. But a woman can actually, abort or kill their fetus or their baby. This gets into these moral issues, but bottom line, we have a right of self-governing. If you have a county where the people have amended their local constitution to allow that county to redefine those things, then they have a right to self-govern them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But they don't have a right to inflict their ideologies of self-governing into the people, nor do they have a right to actually transfer the burden and or the cost of that. Even though they've redefined that life, as long as a person has a conscientious objection against it in paying the taxes for that, then you actually have the ability to keep the purse strings from being used. So somebody, Soros, or somebody with deep pockets, has to continually pay, and government and the taxpayers will never pay for it. Somebody's got to pay for it. And so when the person, and ideally, it will come down to, because eventually, when everybody realizes they can live the life of O'Reilly, or that's disparaging to Irish, they can live a life of sin at the expense of Mr. Soros and Mr. Gates, eventually their pockets will close, right? They're not going to be able to fund the whole world's, you know, abominations, because they've been getting government to do it for them. And so what'll end up happening is that it'll end up going down to the individual having to pay for their, you know, the consequences of their behavior. But bottom line, You can't force people. Again, the Ninth Amendment protects you. You have a right to say, this is absolutely reprehensible. You cannot tax me for that. Because I have a right not to pay a scintilla to actually have a child killed. And that actually, because the Ninth Amendment actually gives you that right. So that you cannot have your rights trampled on because of a majority of people were able to change the Constitution to say, we're going to allow abortions. That means we're going to pay. No, no, no. You can allow abortions, but that doesn't mean we have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. As long as you have one person that conscientiously objects, they cannot be forced into it. The Ninth Amendment was designed to protect the individual right.
Sure.
Okay.
That makes 100% sense.
Okay. All right. But the problem is, are there people that are that evil that will want to legalize abortion? Absolutely there are. We can see it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. We live in a time where adultery, people don't even think, they don't even bring that up anymore. What was the consequence of adultery? It was the same as murder. You kill somebody, you got stoned. Right? The old Mosaic law, if somebody was caught in an adulterous affair, the adulterers were stoned to death. It was a capital offense. Okay, so we've kind of loosened up a lot. everything goes now. So, but the reality is that you can actually make laws that we don't fund for, the divorces, or, you can't get, any assistance from people because of your sins or your behavior. You can't get bankruptcy because when you go through bankruptcy, it's one thing to make mistakes, but if all of a sudden you're going through bankruptcy because of a drug addiction or a gambling, because you got yourself addicted and you spent and squandered all your money, then that doesn't give you that same right as somebody that actually lost their job and was falling apart, hard times. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So because the people should not have to bail out somebody from consequences of what we would consider ultimate transgressions. I mean, bad luck is bad luck, The husband dying and the wife not being able to pay her mortgage and those types of things is completely different than a person that has ingratiated themselves in, addictive behavior that they've become financially ruinous. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to actually get to a point where we have these discussions. Do we restore debtor prison? Debtor prison existed after the Constitution, and most people don't even know, but a Supreme Court justice was removed from the bench and went to debtor prison. Because they held people accountable for their actions. See, liberty is not liberty unless, and we're almost out of time, we got a minute, but liberty, and the whole point of having America be the bastion of liberty, is we actually have to have and hold people accountable for their actions. Liberty has this symbiotic relationship with your free agency, your willingness to be responsible, and the ability to hold you accountable. When those three things are in harmony, liberty will thrive because people will actually think and they'll have discipline before they make bad decisions. That is the path, and that works in this paradigm of enlightenment, because discipline is a key foundation or a key plank to enlightenment, because we have to start realizing that it may be nice to be able to, do things, but for the betterment of me, my family, our community, and our society, we have to discipline ourselves so that we don't chase our whims, our passions, or these things that make us feel good. Which is why we create laws, and down the road, as we go down this path of enlightenment, I think it gets easier and easier to actually start shedding ourselves of bad behavior as a society. But we've had, institutions within our society encourage and basically, you know, tempt and drive people into engaging in very immoral and very bad behavior. We could pick this up on the backside of this, but anyway, we'll be right back after this short promo. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so welcome back, and boy, did you open up this rat hole or what?
It's definitely worth discussion.
Well, so I know that there are people listening that will want to hang me up by my toes because they don't like the moral side, they don't like the immoral side, what have you. When it comes to government, we didn't create a government that was based on morality. We based it on limited and defined powers to only serve us in a very specific capacity. You have to remember that back in those days, they actually had a symbiotic relationship with the churches. And the churches were actually the ones that governed the moral behavior of people. And they were the ones that actually your punishment would be a scarlet letter or excommunication or shunned, whatever. I mean, so that's why people behaved. They didn't need to have all of these different laws. They didn't have to have a law regarding adultery. The church took care of that. So if you look at how things can work at a county and a community level, because let's look at LA as a county. LA is more populated, 13 million, right? LA has a greater population than I could probably say 14, 16, maybe even 19 states together. The county of Los Angeles with 13 million people has that magnitude of population. So the question is, how are they to govern themselves? Well, they need to govern themselves in a Republican form, right? They are required because every U.S. citizen is guaranteed a Republican form of government. So they actually have to come up with a way of governing the people within that county. And in some cases, I think LA needs to be broken down into maybe 4, 5, 6 counties, maybe 10, making it a little bit more manageable, and that each county would be broken into districts. And then at those county levels, the county itself would actually have a representative government that would be adequate for representing those people. Let's back up. You've heard me say this all the time. If you're going to create a government, it has to what? It has to self-sustain itself, right? Mm-hmm. And so LA can easily self-sustain itself because it has the tax base and so forth to be able to divide itself down to where the people can be properly governed and properly represented. So at the state level, the state should actually create, and the counties, when they create their new constitution, here's a hint, folks, that the state needs to determine what the maximum population of a county should be and what the minimum population of that county should be. Because who's doing this figuring? Are the county delegates creating that state constitution? Because this is where, because the counties are the parties to this. The counties really need to say, you know what, if we have a city that's in excess of 1 million people, they're just not going to get the representation they really need in that one county. Because to do that, let's first back up. What is fair and adequate representation?
31 representative for 30,000?
Well, so that's at the federal level, but I honestly think we can change that. I believe that that number can actually go to probably something more like, believe it or not, 20,000. And so let's look at it this way. If we actually have, because I floated this out. I don't know if, I thought I might have floated this out with you. If we go to every person has a representative of 15,000. Let's just go 15 because that cuts the 30,000 in half, right? And so every person has a single representative at 15,000. That 15,000 representative could actually represent us for our county and for our state and for our federal. In other words, they basically deal with consensus because what is the point of representation? Why do we have representatives? Not to actually, you know, give us straight deals. They are limited to the specific powers that they've been granted at the county, state, or level, or the federal constitutions. In other words, there's very little that that federal representation is going to need to do. Right? Go to war? You know, increase taxation on impost? You know, whatever, those few little things, because the federal government can only do a few things. Mm-hmm. At the state level, it's going to have a few more things to do. And then at the county level, that's where the bulk of the stuff's going to be. So if you break down your representation to a person having one person being represented by, I should say 15,000 people being represented by one person, then those 15,000 people actually have a decent ability to engage to where they can actually tell that representative how to vote on the county issue, how to vote on the state issue, and how to vote on the federal issue. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that can actually bubble up into a next tier of representation, because then when you get the consensus from all of the different districts, and this can be easily traceable, this needs to be fully transparent. So when one person can actually see visibility of how their vote was, you know, accounted at the ultimate counting at the first representation, and then how it all tallied up, because everybody could basically see how they all voted. Now, we got to get rid of this concept of secret ballots, because bottom line, when it comes to the consensus of whether you want them to vote for something or vote against something, it's got to be something that's constitutional. We have no authority to ask our representatives to do something that is unconstitutional. Therefore, if you want to have a secret and say, I want you to do something that's unconstitutional, you've only put that guy in peril, because if, at the beginning of the show, if we actually created a very focused Department of Justice and we all was enforcing the Constitution, anytime a person tried to make a vote or tried to do something they didn't have the constitutional authority to do, they'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we have secret ballots? Why does it matter whether you want to go to war or not go to war? Who cares? You have a right to basically say what you want to say. And you shouldn't be disparaged because you don't want to go to war, right?
I don't know. Living in a small town.
I understand that. I do understand when you live in a small town, but we live in America, and everybody in that small town, if you have a couple of dissenters because they feel differently, they don't want to go to war, you should be able to go and slap them on the back and go, you know, I completely respect what you're saying. Because this is America, and you can say what you want. And not harangue them. The problem is we personalize crap way too much. Who knows? They could be right and you could be wrong. And, you know, if we were true Christians, we wouldn't. I mean, if you look back in those days, they had their problems. But they still embraced everybody's right to say what they wanted to say and to do what they wanted to do. You have a right to be offended. So, anyway, I believe that we could easily create a system that would actually have full transparency, and it would bring suffrage closer to the people. Because when you start, you know, divvying it all out by these communities, whether it be 15,000, you could even go lower, because it doesn't matter. These people at the ground level of representation, they may be kind of busy, but they're only being compensated for the little time that they have to. Okay, here's the votes, because it'll come from on high, from the state, the federal, or the county. You know, we got to make a couple of decisions, and we're going to be voting on this by this day, so we need your input by this day. Boom, 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 everything. You know, it all lines up. They know what their schedules are, and every person has a right to be able to go and engage and say, I want you to vote for that. You don't have to. You don't even have to say how you want somebody to vote. But if you care to actually have a voice, then you should be able to say it. And you should be able to say it openly in public without regard of, you know, being harassed, being, you know, heckled or commented. If we're at that point, then your right of free speech cannot be abridged by anybody. Right? So because your rights begin with you. Your rights end with somebody else. So when somebody else takes offense to what you said, you just slap them on the back and say, welcome to America. You have that right to be offended. If we started doing that so that everybody could just go off and you know, get all emotional, you know, I mean, what happens when you tell somebody, hey, calm down. You're getting a little emotional. But how do they usually respond to that?
I mean, you know, not well.
Not well at all. That's right. And as a matter of fact, men need to hear that more often. Right? I mean, men are really quick at doing that to the kinder, gentler, you know, sex. But I believe that men are equally emotional. They get equally wound up. And I think they need to start hearing that more often. You know, and there's really derogatory ways of saying it. But hey, calm down. You're getting a little emotional. Boy, that really just sets people off. But we need to get thick skin, because these things aren't that important. What is important is that you have a voice in your system, and that is, and how you voice must be respected and it must be counted. When it comes to, because literally it is, do we go to war or we don't go to war? And your representatives, because right now they have the power to interpret what they want. We do not have a representative system, because there's no way they're representing all million people at the federal level. And the same problem at the state. If we want our suffrage to actually mean something, we actually have to fix the system, because it's way out of hand. Getting to the state legislature, when it comes to the Senate, you can actually have a system where the state legislature, they create the consensus, they all agree based on the majority, this is exactly how you, our senators, will vote. And it's the same thing, the counties getting their suffrage in the state Senate. And in the county Senate, getting their suffrage in the county Senate in LA. So that the people and the people's government have their suffrage and it's protected. That's the most important thing. I know there's going to be growing pains. I know that we're a bunch of drama queens. I mean, drama queens are everywhere. They took a good, perfectly good name, Karen, and has created an abomination to that name. Any woman that is named Karen today, you know, they just have to swallow. Oh, no. I wish I didn't have that name. Because of what we've done, this label lynching, and we created these negative connotations because of one name, right? Mm-hmm. So we all have to actually just put it to where it is. Quit being the drama queen instead of calling them Karens. Quit, and as a matter of fact, you want to be a drama king or queen if you want to put sex to it, you know, because it could be an insult. I don't even care if it's an insult, really. But, you know, labeling somebody as a Karen is not representative. But labeling somebody as a drama queen, drama king, or just a, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to use, it should be okay. As a matter of fact, if you're so upset at the president of the United States, you should have a right to be able to say, you know what, I'd kill that guy if I had my hands wrapped around his neck right now. Because you could be that pissed off, but that doesn't mean you're going to kill him. Thomas Jefferson, in his campaign, and while he was president, when he did the tariffs, there were some people up in Massachusetts, because they were being so ill affected, they actually wrote letters to him that, you know, I'm going to come kill you. And so what? We now have every communication being monitored by Secret Service and by the police state, which is all unconstitutional, just to protect the president, because we've allowed ourselves and enabled this emotional frenzy to get so out of hand that, you know, people are really disturbed. I think that the way forward is making everybody a part of the militia, because I think that once we do this, we're going to realize that there are people in society, when everybody has to tote a gun to actually enforce the laws of the county, state, and federal, the way the system is designed, then we will realize that there are people at this point in time, they do not have the maturity or the ability. And as a matter of fact, in the Marine Corps, it was an S on your back. You know, when they realized how you handled a fake hand grenade, the way, you know, you acted, at any point in time, they would put an S on your back if they thought you were a little spastic. Can't trust this guy, so that you don't give a live hand grenade to this guy at this point in time. Same thing with live rounds. You don't give this guy live rounds because he's just going to go panic and shoot everybody. And so those people that get marked like that, they get kicked out. Hold on here. Doesn't he have a right to be? No. If you can't live with the rigors of the stress and everything else of what you have to do with the application of deadly force, we as a society have a right to say, well, you're not going to defend us. You're not going to enforce the laws. You can't be in the military. That makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. That means that if you can't be in the militia, your right to bear arms goes away. At least those types of deadly, it means you can still carry a knife, but you just can't project that kind of deadly force. That makes sense? Mm-hmm. And I know the Second Amendment people are probably just, they're on the ground quivering and shaking and then in full seizure mode. That's okay, because we're not there as a society yet. But if we were, where everybody was being trained in the education system, every child was being trained, you know, the skills of, you know, safety, handling the munitions, those types of things, we would probably have far less drama queens and spastics than we would in, you know, as a good disciplined society. We failed to discipline ourselves. That is the, go ahead.
Yeah, I believe that, yeah.
So that's the key in the different services. Every service has a boot camp. Only one service requires you go through their boot camp to actually wear their uniform. If you have been in one service, three of the services, and now maybe the fourth, Space Force, whatever, But when you look at the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force, if you were in any service and you went through boot camp, you could go in without having to go through boot camp again. You just go through a familiarization training of understanding the rank and the structure, that type of stuff. But in the Marine Corps, doesn't matter what boot camp you went through, you're going through the Marine Corps boot camp. Because the Marine Corps discipline is different than the rest of the boot camps. It's the same thing when you go to the elite schools like the SEAL or the Special Forces, anything recon, Marine Corps recon. You have to go through another series of discipline training to where you know, they put you in the sand with sand fleas, and if you move, you're out. Because you're getting bit, you get itched and everything else, and you have to discipline yourself not to react and respond because you can get yourself and everybody else killed. So the levels of discipline go up when you actually are in a training or in a force that requires that level of discipline. Society needs discipline. And we have not done that. We're at a point where you can't even touch children in school.
Yeah.
Because how dare you? How dare you touch my child? We have been enabling bad behavior, and I understand I'm going to get hate mail for what I just said, but we all have a responsibility. As a matter of fact, your child shouldn't even be in a military school. It shouldn't even be in the school system. We actually should be training our own children. You have a child, you've got the responsibility of making sure that that child gets the best education. If there's anybody that cares more about that child than you, we've got a problem. Because, you know, why did you have the child? Oh, well, because I wasn't thinking. Well, that's gone on for years and years and years. But we should have a level of discipline. And so, if we don't, then we have ourselves to blame. Does that make sense, right? I mean, I'm hoping this is making sense.
For sure.
Okay. All right. So where do we go from here? You open up this can of worms. Did I kind of close it or did I just, wow. I mean, because I think there's probably a good trail in many directions of rat holes I've kind of exposed here.
I still have some controversy in my head over it that I'm going
over to the abortion
out.
Over the abortion issue or just
yes.
Over I understand that but the point is that you have to look at how can we have a perfect government where people have at least the maximum amount of liberty that can be afforded. Let me ask you this. Do you believe Christ will come here someday and reign on the earth?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe that free agency will be taken? Or do you believe that people will still be able to commit sins that they, you know, if they want to commit a sin, they're going to be able to do that?
They'll be able to do that.
But we believe, and I'm telling you, that the people that will be living at that point in time will be so disciplined they won't have the desire to commit sin.
Right.
Because they've been taught. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. The problem is that we have not been teaching people the foundations of what they need to know. And so, you know, how dare you inflict your ideology? How dare... But see... When we backed off away from being involved in our own children, in our community education systems that the framers had, it was all homeschooling back in those days. And then we went down to this, in the 1850s or so, we went to this military academy type of training, and it was public and everybody paid for it. And we slowly wormed our way away from the foundation of morality and those types of things that are essential lessons for a child to learn. Well, now we started actually, you know, creating a generational problem of no morals and actually psychopaths. We've got psychopaths bringing up psychopaths. Sorry.
Yeah.
But that's where we are today because we allowed people to obviate their real responsibility when you have that child, there is a sacred and a fundamental legal responsibility you have for that child. And being able to shift that off so that we pay for it. Next thing you know, we start governing ourselves to where we've completely wrapped ourselves in bubble wrap and political correctness to where everything goes. And this is how we did it. That's how we did it. And to undo that, we actually have to get everybody back into the mindset of liberty, being accountable. You got to be accountable for that kid you just had. You got to be responsible for their behavior and accountable for their behavior. All of those types of things have to be brought to the table. I mean, I don't think it's complicated, but I think that we have simplified things so much and made bad behavior become so easy. Not only is it easy, we actually tell people, well, go ahead and smoke or drink. You know, we'll give you a new liver if you ruin that one. You got free medical care. No consequences to bad behavior. That's the society we have today. And so to me, I think it's a bigger arching problem. So back to this, Governor Morris and the interest of the people and the representation, the whole point that I went down this path was that we wanted to make sure that when we had redress, that redress was with representation. The only reason we would be standing in front of a judge is because they actually have jurisdiction over a matter such as property. Now, near as I can tell, when you look at property disputes between somebody on your land and on the others, I don't think that's delegated to the state to deal with those things. That is a common law issue. And this, I've looked in our government, or I should say I've looked in the Washington and many state constitution. Is common law mentioned in the Wyoming state constitution?
I don't know.
Ah, see, if we don't look for those things, because 9 times out of 10 when you read it, you know, you're thinking, oh, well, I think it's in there. I don't remember reading it, but I think it's in there. And I'm here to tell you that you'd be surprised to find out that it either it is or isn't. But I think in most cases, you will find that it is not mentioned at all. And so, common law, no matches. It is not brought up once in the Wyoming state constitution, which means that all common law issues are not delegated to the state. All common law issues are delegated to the local courts, period. But nobody understands that. And everybody thinks the common law goes all over the place. No, the state courts were defined with very specific, just like federal jurisdiction. Federal jurisdiction is based on those things arising under this Constitution. The Article 5 Convention, that arises under the Constitution so that you can go into federal court over that. Do elections for your representatives, for the electors and all of that, does that arise under the Constitution? No. The choosing of the electors does, the process of that. The choosing of your representation does, the process of that. They have a responsibility to ensure that the processes were, you know, the legitimate outcomes and those types of things. But they don't have any cognizance or control over elections. And 9 times out of 10, the states have assumed that power. So we've ran out of time. When we come back tomorrow, we will actually dive into these very specific issues of the notes on the ratification versus anything else. So, folks, we'll be back. And again, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And obviously, we can dive into a lot of these deeper issues. But what we want to do is we want to stay focused in how and what the framers really talked about, because that's actually where their jurisdiction lies. Again, G.R. Mobley, we're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract.
integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.